Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show.
It is take two for the Bears this season, but tonight we might actually know some of the names on the field. How much should Mitch Trubisky play against the Bengals? And will we see Roquan Smith play in the preseason at all? Jose Quintana pitched well until Kansas City became a royal pain last night. Meanwhile, Yu Darvish said he felt good after throwing 30-plus pitches in a sim game. Can the Cubs actually rely on Darvish down the stretch? Meanwhile, the rebuilding White Sox get swept by the Yankees, and Yoan Moncada strikes out two more times, on pace to break the Major League record. Should the White Sox just let him swing away? Welcome into Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Cap is off, enjoying yet another vacation in Texas. So, howdy, y'all. I'm Luke Stuckmeyer. Let's meet the panel for today's show. It is full of Chicago media veterans. Dan Cahill, Hub Arkish, and Fred Mitchell, Mount Rushmore of sports writers from this area. Guys, we start with the beloved tonight. Our postcards from camp are brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Preseason game number two is just a few minutes away now in Cincinnati. Mitch Trubisky will start, but should he play? That is the Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Hub, what do you think? How much should he play tonight?
I'd say two series. You know, I wouldn't be disappointed if they only gave him one series, but you don't have any control over that. Sometimes you come out, you go three and out. You don't get anything out of that. If they were to be successful, put together a 10-12 play drive, maybe you don't bring him out for the second series. But there's a rhythm to this. I mean, teams have been doing this for a while, and it usually is the first of the four exhibition games where you give them that series or two. And, you know, we've been in Bourbonnais. We've seen how much they're installing here, how much he's trying to get his arms around. He needs, you know, game speed. He needs real time to test some of that. And so you give him his 10-12 plays, and you get him off the field healthy, hopefully.
Healthy is the big key.
It's always the key. Yeah, I mean, the preseason's about staying healthy for the key guys, especially that you're counting on. And like Hope said, you want to establish a rhythm. You know, coaches look at just the basic routines, breaking the huddle, not making huge mistakes, not jumping off sides, things like that, egregious errors that you don't want to see. But it depends on the progress of the game in terms of how long you want to keep a guy in at quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that hasn't seen a lot of reps over his college and pro career. I think you go with him if you're Nagy. You go with him as long as you feel okay. I think he's got it. You know, the common thinking would be about eight snaps, maybe two series. You know, if they march the ball down the field on the first drive, leave him in. But I think you got to go with him until you see enough. Okay, he's got it.
That, I mean, the thought process just about the preseason and training camp, am I wrong to say that it has definitely changed over the years? You see 88% of fans even saying on this poll, oh, don't play him at all, where we had Matt Nagy come in and say he wanted a tough physical camp. But the days of guys beating each other up at training camp and going full bore in these preseason games, those are gone, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was really interesting. I was in Canton last Thursday night. Obviously, I'm not in Cincinnati tonight. I mean, I think five preseason games is too much for media, too. But we'll race home and watch it on TV and write a column about it. Matt came into the post-game interview afterwards, and one of the first things he said, he just kind of smiled and shook his head, asked about, you know, nobody played, none of the starters. He said, it's just not worth it. He said, you know, it's a long season. The risk is too great, especially with the extra game, and they don't want to get anybody hurt. That is their biggest concern. The flip side of that is this is what these guys do for a living, and if you don't practice it at game speed, you're not going to get better at it. And so I think that's why they've got this plan where they build to it slowly. And they give them a series or two. It's not just Trubisky. You know, maybe you'll see Kevin White on the field for a series or two. Probably not after that. Kyle Long, I don't even know if he'll get. Kyle Long, I would guess, may not. I mean, I guess they're starting any minute, so people will find out.
Yeah, and I guess he just came out like 5 minutes ago and said Kyle Long is going to play a couple snaps.
Okay, he's going to play. So, again, if it's a question of getting him on the field, let him try a little bit. Kyle's having a great camp, by the way. When he's on the field, he looks really good. Now, you know, they've been careful with him. So I think that, you know, clearly Matt Nagy may be a rookie head coach, but he gets it. He understands that as much as he's anxious to see his offense and to see if these guys can run it, he's got three more preseason games after this one, so you just give him a little bit at a time and let him build to it.
You're right. I mean, practices have changed in the NFL. And not only in the preseason, but during the regular season. You know, back in the days of the two-a-day practices and contact on the first day with the hamburger drill when Ditka was coach, those days are gone. So, you know, you hear a lot of fans complaining about these guys don't know how to tackle anymore. They don't practice in live action that much anymore. And, you know, you wait until you get into a game, even a preseason game, to work on fundamentals like that.
Yeah, after watching that opening Hall of Fame game and the way it was refereed, it kind of looked like touch football to me. So I really don't think we have to worry about Mitch taking a shot in this game.
It is, Dan, you make a great point, though, that it's one of the reasons some of these coaches are saying they may actually let these guys play a little bit more in the preseason because of the officiating changes this year, not knowing how it's going to be called. Not so much Trubisky or the quarterback, but particularly these guys on defense. And the other thing that's going to be interesting, they're supposed to call it both ways. It is supposed to be just as illegal for an offensive player to lower his head. And so we'll see if they will call that. They didn't last week. And if they're going to, these players have to get a feel for it and understand what's going to be called.
Hub, I think you bring up a great point. There's a delicate balance between how much should a guy play to get in game shape, and then is he overplaying to the extent where he might get hurt? And I mean, I remember my discussions with Ditka. He would always, these guys are getting hurt because they don't play hard, and then they get into a game, and you can't turn the faucet on and off. And you know, hamstring injuries and other things start to pop up.
So we'll see Trubisky tonight, our first real look of what he might do in this new offense. Obviously, they're not going to run out the playbook for him. Javon Wims was pretty good in the Hall of Fame game. Who's he competing with on this team? Is it like Bellamy if he's trying to make the roster, the 53? Is it a long shot that someone like that could make it all the way from that game to the 53?
Yeah, I think the big question, Luke, is are they going to carry five or six? You get into the numbers game with the 53-man roster. A lot of teams carry six. The Bears have historically, the last few years, started with five. Sometimes they end up with six. And they've only got four absolute, you know, these guys are set. When you look at Allen Robinson, you look at Taylor Gabriel, you look at Anthony Miller, you look at Kevin White. Josh Bellamy is their favorite special teams player. He should not be allowed to even line up at wide receiver. I mean, he is more likely to drop the ball than catch it. They still keep running him out there, okay? I would think if they can carry six, Wims is that sixth guy off what we saw last week. Now, guys, it's preseason. Somebody else is going to pop up tonight and have five or six catches, but he had a really good game last week. And, you know, you drafted him. He's a draft pick, and, you know, you invest that capital, you want to see him make the team. I think he's more likely at some point to be on the practice squad this year. But if they carry six right now, he's probably number six.
Okay, I do want to ask you about Anthony Miller in a second, but the Roquan update is no Roquan update. You know, we sat here 3 weeks ago, and just about everybody, myself included, said this is no big deal. It's no big deal. But now we're getting a little bit closer. Jay Hilgenberg, I heard him on The Score today, say he'd be surprised if at this point, if Smith signed, he still doesn't think he'd be ready to play on opening day, the season opener. At what point does this become really, really serious business for the Bears?
Well, you know, we hear that he's taking very good care of himself and staying in top shape.
Right.
You know, we'll see, right? And it's a little different working out on your own versus with a team, but he's at a position that ostensibly he could. He's got a lot to learn, right? And not only learning the system, but learning about his teammates, the guys around him, and how to communicate what's going on defensively.
Yeah, I think about another week before this becomes troublesome. You know, the darn thing with this is, why do you let your agency make an example of you is basically what's happening. You know, this isn't about him. It's about the next guys that they sign. Hey, look what we were able to accomplish with Roquan. I think at some point he's got to step in and say, okay, you know.
Unless he believes strongly in it and it's something he wants to, you know, change.
I think Dan has touched on it, though, and I've tried to tap dance around this really carefully the last few weeks because I have not been in the room. I mean, I know what I'm hearing from really good sources, and all of my fellow guys on the media members on the beat, we all seem to agree what we're being told by pretty much everybody around this situation, and it has reached the point where this agency is working for itself. It is not working for this football player. I think that the Bears have probably already gone a little further than anybody thought they might have with what they've agreed to. Mm-hmm. And so, Jay knows a lot more about this than I do. I would tend to beg to differ a little bit. I think if he gets on the plane Tuesday to go to Denver, he's going to be your starting, one of your starting inside linebackers. But now we're just talking about in 4 or 5 more days. I think he's a good kid. I've only had 2 fairly extended conversations with him, but very impressive. You hear nothing but good things. It's time to grow up. 21 years old, you're a majority now, you got to make your own decisions, and he needs to understand that these agents are doing him no favors, and it's time for him to say, I got to go play football, and hopefully that'll happen in the next week or two.
Is this something that could have come up in one of the pre-draft conversations? I guess they ask these kids all kinds of crazy things. Is this something you ask a player in a pre-draft situation?
I can guarantee you he knew nothing about this until they were close to finishing the deal, and that's when these guys at CAA said, all right, let's go get something here now, you know?
It's a great point, though, Luke. I'll bet it will now.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, you have to at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy because, I mean, those have gotten so ridiculous over some of the things that are asked.
Here's the other thing about it, guys. CAA is not going away. They had 7 of the top 10 picks. I mean, it's Tom Condon's group. Tom is not driving this particular negotiation. But this is going to be the new norm. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to fight for this as best they can, at least between now and the next CBA. And so, yeah, I would think at next year's combine, every top prospect is going to be asked, are you your own man? Are you going to let your agent make your decisions for you?
Bears and Bengals coming up tonight. Jose Quintana wasn't pitching too poorly. Then the 7th inning happened last night. But help could be on the way for the rotation. Yu Darvish felt good after his sim game. Do we trust that he'll feel good enough to return soon? Meanwhile, Yoan Moncada is swinging his way into baseball's history books, but not in a good way. Should the Sox and their fans be concerned?
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move?
I think Pack wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Well, the Yankees swept the White Sox. Umpires have bad nights, and then they have bad nights. Like when a moth flies into your ear canal. Now, why did they keep it alive? Why didn't they just let it fly away? What are you holding? Is it a science experiment?
And this is proof that umpires do have something between the ears.
See, I set you up for that. We're a good team. 2 more strikeouts last night for Yoan Moncada. He's on pace to strike out more times in a season than any player in baseball history. I don't think it's a big deal because if you looked at Javi Baez 3 years ago, he was like Bugs Bunny at the plate, swinging so hard that he just spun himself into the dirt. A young player goes through struggles. Sometimes that means he strikes out way more than he should. Do you agree that it's not a big deal that he's on this
record
pace?
The game of baseball has changed over the decades in the sense that there's no sense of embarrassment. And I remember conversations I had with Ernie Banks and Billy Williams and players from that era, great players from that era. And they would talk about how they felt embarrassed if they struck out.
Right.
You want to make contact. These guys now, it's no big deal. You know, they're swinging for the fences. So many of them, and a strikeout doesn't have the same negative connotation to it.
Well, Javi Baez might be an MVP this year, and he still strikes out a lot.
Well, you stole my analogy, because even in the 16 World Series, one of the things that sticks with me the most is that you could throw a breaking ball anywhere within 10 feet of the plate, and he was going to strike out.
You know? Yeah.
And I sat there watching, saying, I love the defense, but I'm not sure I see the upside. And right now, he should probably be the front runner for the MVP. If not, he's certainly a candidate when you look at, you know, what other things the Cubs have overcome. So, no, I don't think you panic about Moncada, but I'm sure the Sox hitting coaches are taking a little more scientific approach to it. Why is he striking out as much? I mean, I'm watching some of this film that we're showing here. It looks like he's yanking his head a little bit to me. Now, I'm not a coach, you know, but if it's a mechanical thing and they're working on it and he's unable to fix it, then you do start to worry about it.
Yeah, I think Fred's right. The fact that he's striking out a lot puts him in the elite group of players right now.
I mean, everybody
he's,
does
he's it. Part of the group. And I think with Moncada too, Baez, like you said, was going to swing at anything that was within 20 feet of the plate. With him, sometimes he takes a called third strike, you know, so it might even be an eyesight thing or something that they can easily correct.
I know Rick Sutcliffe has gone on record saying he thinks they're doing a disservice that he's at this level right now, that he could have been held back like some of the other guys. But at some point, it's okay to fail at this level for a little while. I mean, he still has like 14 or 15 or maybe even more than that home runs. Is it 17 home runs? He got a lot of home runs this year. So he's still done some positive things at this level. And you're not trying to win a ton of games right now anyway, so.
Well, also, it's not like they rushed him.
No.
I mean, you know, Boston had him up for part of a season before they even acquired him. He went through the normal path of you know, rookie ball, A, double A. You know, yes, he's young, but I don't know. I'd be more worried about what you would do to him mentally if you sent him back down again at this point.
Yeah. Or I mean, sit him. I don't think you want to do that either.
Yeah, I think they found a book on him, and they found a weak spot.
Right.
And he's just going to have to adjust.
Exactly.
That happens to every player. Speaking of adjustments, Yu Darvish feels good after a simulated pitching 33 pitches yesterday on the bullpen. Hasn't pitched in a real game, though, since May 20th. Are you starting to believe that Darvish will come back and be a part of this team, a valuable part of this team towards the end of the season?
Well, he's certainly capable. You know, we're hearing that he's not feeling the pain that he's feeling.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. And then the second thing is how effective will his pitches be? How much confidence will he have? I think you know, just his body language in the past kind of demonstrates that he lacks a little confidence in his pitches. And will he become aggressive as a pitcher, having gone through what he's gone through and the slow start that he's had on the mound?
For his sake and the Cubs' sake, I hope that when he does go to the rehab and then gets his first chance with the Cubs, that his first game is a good one. Because I feel like, listen, the pain wasn't the problem in the first 8 starts. The problem was he wasn't controlling the 10 different pitches that he can throw. Let's see if he can get past that. And I think a good first game back, whenever that might be, would be awfully helpful to him.
You know, to your initial question, it was either the last week in June or the first week in July they were scheduling his rehab assignment, and then he felt this strain in the tricep, I think it was, and now it's been another month. So I don't think you can really count on him or feel good about it until he's given you a few starts and you see that he can throw at this level without pain.
Yeah, and I think it can't come at a better time if he does come back with Quintana kind of, you know, suffering a little bit right now. Lester seems like he might be a little bit on the tired side. Now you bring you in, you can maybe rest those guys a little bit. I mean, it's perfect timing if he can come back strong.
Well, Cole Hamels seems like a pretty good move, at least right now. They certainly need the extra arm. There's a golf major this weekend, which means everybody's going to keep an eye on Tiger Woods. Can he finally get another major title? Or will a member of golf's next generation win the PGA Championship? We're back on Sports Talk Live.
Are you a White Sox authentic fan? We want to hear from you. Every authentic fan night, we designate one winner as the fan of the game, which includes tickets to the game, meet and greets, plus an authentic game day experience. Enter for your chance to win at NBCSportsChicago.com/WhiteSoxAF.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Live. Tiger Woods saved his round, rallied today after being 3 over on the first 2 holes. He finished with an even par round of 70. Everybody chasing Ricky Fowler, who's the leader right now. Tiger flat out said, listen, sometimes it doesn't break that way, but he was able to grind out this round and keep himself in the tournament, because you can have a really bad first round and be completely out of it after day one. So I don't know if he's going to win the major, But at least he's in the tournament in a conversation for maybe the weekend.
And it certainly helps TV ratings to have him there on a Sunday. It's like a lot of other sports. He's hanging around, right? And he hasn't been able to close the deal in quite a while. But as long as he contends, he gives himself a chance, and who knows what might happen.
Yeah, I think he's definitely back. The head has been cleared, you know, barring an injury. I think he's definitely back, and I think he's got another major in him. I don't know that it's this one, but he's that good. You just don't lose it that quickly. Can he get to where Jack was? Probably not, but he's definitely got another major win left in him.
That's really interesting to me. I'm the wrong guy to ask about this. I've had a belly full of Tiger, you know, all the time that he has been non-competitive, and yet there's still been so much focus on him. And what I don't understand about this is that there are at least three or four of the next generation who have a chance to be every bit as good as him. Mm-hmm. Why do we still need Tiger, for the PGA to be what it is? It just doesn't make any sense to me because I look at Dustin Johnson, who's a fascinating story. Yeah. I look at Spieth, who's a wonderful kid. McIlroy, I actually like a lot. I don't know if everybody else does. You got Patrick Reed. I mean, one after the other, these kids could all put on a run of majors, and it's like, oh, but we need Tiger. I don't understand why we need Tiger.
They could put on a run, but would they ever be that good, that dominant? And maybe it is. Maybe it's because it's just too competitive right now. Maybe, but Tiger had some pretty good players he was going up against. You know, you go way back, it was pretty much Jack Arnold. Throw in Gary Player. But yeah. Now there's a bunch of talented players, but can they sustain it as long as Tiger did?
Yeah, I mean, Dan, I don't know, and I'm certainly not trying to take anything away from his legacy. And I'm not a golf expert, but I'm pretty sure that right now at their age that Spieth and McIlroy are very much on a Tiger Woods
He's still the biggest name in his sport compared to any other athlete in their sport, right? Even LeBron in the NBA has names around him that are big, but Tiger in golf, he almost has been golf for the last.
Well, I think the comparison there is Michael hasn't played in 15 years, yet he's still one of the biggest names in basketball. So that Tiger is in that league, and he deserves it. I'm not trying to take that away from him. I was talking about playing today, though. I don't care if Tiger's in the tournament or not. I want to see all these incredible kids, and whichever one wins it is fine by me.
Hub's on an island all by himself. The rest of the day is all over here.